Welcome to the Nachum Segal Network and this week's edition of Buy the Book, brought to you by Koren Publishers, KORENPUB.com. It's KorenPub.com for information about all their amazing work that you could access from around the world on the web. This week we have a unique opportunity during this week of Yom Yerushalayim. We get to look back at the history of the Koren Tanakh and really at the history of an incredible person, Eliyahu Koren. Did you know the official emblem of the city of Jerusalem was actually designed by Eliyahu Koren in the year 1951? Did you know that the State of Israel very recently honored Koren Publishers by issuing an official postage stamp to mark the 50th anniversary of the Koren Tanakh? That's just two tidbits of information that I'm sure are intriguing to everybody. We'll have more, I'm sure, in this conversation. Yoshua Miller is with us, editor-in-chief of Koren Publishers Jerusalem. Originally from the UK, he now lives in Israel and served as commander in combat unit of the IDF. Studied at Yeshivat Haaretzion for 8 years. And as I always like to say, Yeshivat Haaretzion always seems to work its way into these conversations. Has taught Bible, Halacha, and Talmud in a number of educational institutions throughout Israel. He holds rabbinical ordination from the Chief Rabbinate of Israel and a B.A. in Education, Bible, and Hebrew Literature from Herzog College. Yoshua Miller, welcome to the Nachum Segal Network.
Hi, Nachum.
Eliav Stolman is with us as well, brand manager at Koren Publishers Jerusalem, an eighth generation Jerusalemite. Eliav grew up going to the same shul as Eliyahu Koren and has used the Koren Tanakh and Siddur his entire life. He's also an alum of Yeshivat Haaretzion and served in the IDF and graduated from Bar Ilan University. Eliav Stolman, welcome to the Nachum Segal Network.
Hi, Nachum. Thank you for having us.
Yehoshua Miller, who was Eliyahu Koren?
Wonderful question, Nachum. I think chronology could be of assistance here. Eliyahu Koren, or Koren Gold, as he was before, was living in Nazi Germany. And in 1933, he realized he had to escape. He made his way to Israel somehow. And here in Israel, he, wandering the place, wandering the land, an extremely talented artist, graphic designer, and calligraph, he managed to work for the Keren Kayemet Lisrael, for the JNF. And while working, and everyone noticed his unique talent, the Hebrew Yew, who was trying to create the Jewish Tanakh, turned to him to request that he would design both the Tanakh and the Tanakh letter. Now, just a bit of background for that. For the 400 years before that, all Tanakhim created over those 400 years of print were all created by a Christian, both for Christians, of course, but also for the Jewish communities were kind of more or less offtakes of the Christian ones. And those were all the communities were learning from all those years. And the Hebrew Yew wanted to create a Jewish Tanakh relying upon the Jewish sources, and even from the start of the letter, they wanted to make sure that the letter was a Hebrew, or Israelite, or Jewish, however you want to put it, was a Jewish letter. And so he set to work. That took about 20 years. In the course of that time, in 1949, Jerusalem found itself without an emblem. And they turned to a whole array of different designers. And Eliyahu Koren and a small team of other talented artists came up with what we now know as the famous Jerusalem emblem. And just starting from that, because that flows right into the Tanakh, when we look at the emblem that most people know, I hope, we see a lion standing upright and proud. And in the background, we see the Kotel. You can't miss the Kotel. There's the big stones at the top, the small additions, the small stones, and two olive rafts on either side. And that, for Eliyahu Koren, who was now Koren and not Koren Gold, as he was in Nazi Germany,
right,
for Eliyahu Koren was the unique combination of the old and the new, the 2,000-year-old Kotel, with the line of Judah, the line of the tribe of Judah, which Jerusalem is the capital. The lion standing upright after 2,000 years of not having the Kotel next to us, not having the ancient tradition, finally reaching it and standing upright. And the combination of the two, aligned with the olive wreath, It's an Israeli speaking, after all. The olive wreath on either side, the olive symbolizing the Jewish nation, the eternity of the Jewish nation. The combination of the new and old for Eliyahu Cohen was of utmost importance because on the one hand, he came with all his modern techniques and design and his whole German and high-class school of thought of design, and he wanted to combine it with the Masoret, with the tradition, and with Halacha. But in the end, he managed to do it in the Kohen Tanakh. That was a decade later, a decade after the Emblem. Finally, after a lot of strenuous work, he came out with the Tanakh, which on the one hand was perfect design, slaved away at the very letter of the Tanakh Koran, making sure that it's in sync both with the ancient Ashurit, in sync with the ancient Jewish writing that was been used in Jewish texts for the past 2,600 years. On the other hand, is modern, readable, and extremely aesthetic. And the combination of new and old, which was of so much significance to him, found its way both into the Jerusalem emblem and also into the Tanakh Bible that we've been using for the past 52 years.
And how,
just a tidbit.
And how perfect is that? I mean, you talk about the State of Israel, the renewal of the Jewish people 2,000 years later, and a thousand other expressions you could use to describe it. It's like the perfect synthesis, the perfect combination in both cases. We've seen the emblem of the city of Jerusalem thousands of times. I don't know if anybody has ever in this audience has ever stopped to think about its significance and how much work went into it to create the message that you just described. And when it comes to the Koran Tanakh, I think among people outside of Israel, we never really paid careful attention as to the detail that went into it and how historically significant it is. This may sound like a silly question, but do we consider him a scholar? You spoke about his graphic design, if that's the way we would put it, and about his meticulousness when it came to the way letters should look and how it should include, again, you know, the tradition while, you know, have a modernized look to it. But in addition to that, must one be a scholar to go ahead and work on a Tanakh in this fashion?
That question isn't that silly. If I may.
Thank you.
So he wasn't a scholar, but you don't need to be a scholar. You have to respect scholars. And that's exactly what he did. He knew he was the best. Now we know that he was the best in his field, in design, in meticulous design, in strenuous work, slaving 20 years just to create the letter. Just for an example, what it means to create an alphabet, a font, a Hebrew font. It's 22 letters. Add the five otiyot sofiyot, the final letters. That's 27 letters. Times that, multiply that by the nikud, by the different vowels.
Right.
That, of course, you have to sign in Hebrew. That you have to play in sync with each of the letters and decide where it falls under the aleph, where it falls into the lamed, and multiply that by the fact that when you have two different letters, let's say Aleph and Lamed, or Lamed and Dalid, or Dalid and Nun, they each play together in a completely different way. And you have to create a different block, a different set for each combination of letters. That's a huge amount of work. And Eliyahu Cohen went into that work. He actually made a different dagesh, the expression that we find, the small dot in the middle of the letters. He created a different dagesh for each letter because the space you have for each of the letters is different. He actually created a different dagesh for each of the 27 letters. So he knew what he was good at, but he also knew that he had to have someone scholarly on the team, and he had utmost respect for that. He brought in the three top Tanakh scholars of his day, one Rav Haberman, one Rav Meir Maidan, father of Rav Yaakov Maidan, and Rav Goldschmidt. Those were the three top scholars of this day, and they just slaved away over the Tanakh, making sure that it was based originally on the Leningrad Codex, and fixing it up so it will be meticulous and perfect, not only from a design point of view, but also from a scholarly point of view. They would just sit around scraping off the different vowels on each of the letters to make sure that each one was according to tradition.
I'm sure hundreds of people are heading to their bookcase right now to confirm this, but can an average guy with his naked eye realize that a dagesh is different depending on what letter it's in the current Tanakh?
Oh, no way.
There's not a chance.
No way, no way. If you take the fattest dagesh and the thinnest dagesh, yeah, maybe, if you really look hard. but that, if I could give the Achilles heel of the company still today, the meticulous design and the high standard that dealing with aesthetic issues that most people don't even notice, it's still around. It's still around. It's still happening, and it still makes projects much, much, much longer. That's the truth.
Yeah.
But we still have the same standard.
Yehoshua Miller is editor-in-chief of Karin Publishers Jerusalem. Eliav Stolman, brand manager at Karin Publishers Jerusalem. Can we go back in history then a little bit? And you mentioned that the any Tanakh, any Bible that had been produced either was under the jurisdiction completely or tremendous influence of non-Jews. I think some of that might even have lasted until today. You could describe that for us if it's true. So what are the differences? In other words, was it a bad thing to not have it under the auspices of the Jewish people? Did we suffer in terms of having it as a scholarly work and as a guide for our lives by the fact that there was so much non-Jewish influence in it?
Well, you know, the previous Bibles were written by Christians or converts, you know, and there were a lot of mistakes. We're talking about thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of mistakes. So, of course, that really made a difference. But, you know, I think it's more than that. You know, if you look, Nachum, at Bibles throughout history, in a way they're like time capsules. You know, you could learn a lot about the time, the era, the scholars, the Jewish identity at the time, and even the technology that was available throughout, like Bibles. And I think the Kolen Bible is a great example when it really shows you something about the time and place where it was developed. It was in this special moment where the State of Israel, you know, was born, and the technology that was involved, and the work, you know, the scholars, all Orthodox Jews that were taking part in this immense program, they really tell a story that is more from just about, you know, the Bible as we know it today, but something about that time and place. And there is something very romantic, you know, about the Kohen Tanakh in that sense.
Right.
If I could bring an example.
Yeah.
Just to elaborate on what Eliav is saying, if you just open the Tanakh on the first page, you notice that the division that we currently use, that most people use, is the Christian division. It's not just a question of setting up the prakim; it's definitely a question of agenda. And separating, if you see the Christian chapters, separating between the 6 days of creation and the seventh day, saying it's not part of that. Something else, allowing it to be Sunday, like the Christians keep. That's something which is definitely part of the agenda. When you look at the Korem Tanakh, we have to put in the Christian chapters that everyone used, but we also bring in the original Jewish division, which separates the second chapter after the seventh day, which is the real Jewish agenda. And there are numerous examples throughout Tanakh where it may be just a minute detail of adding a vav, adding a lamed, adding an aleph, which changes the whole agenda, and there's a specific and explicit Christian agenda there that is not there at all in the Koran Tanakh.
So how does one go through hundreds of years of this Christian influence on the publication we know as the Bible, and then go back and change what needs to be changed, or corrects what needs to be corrected? It must take an insane amount of research.
So, on the one hand, unfortunately, the Tanakh wasn't learned that much until the beginning of Israel. Mm. It just wasn't learned. The main book was the Talmud. So all the Jewish heritage and the Jewish tradition of the Tanakh, it was all there. It was all happening. It wasn't happening in the books, and no one was there to notice. But it was all happening, the halachic responses. It was all there, but no one put it in. Taking the fact that with the creation of the Jewish state, coming back to the places where the things actually happened, living in Jerusalem, living in places like Beit El, living in places like Yafo, living in places like Tveria, living in places which are mentioned in the Bible, it aroused a new interest, and that's what generated the request. So coming back to the Tanakh was something obviously 20 years of work, but it was something that had to be done, and just Eliyahu Cohen stood up and
right. Oh no, I understand that, but Jewish rabbinic leadership in the 1600s and 1700s, 1800s, they were familiar with the Tanakh as an important work in our tradition. Am I right?
Familiar, definitely. I mean, the Bible scholars had to know it, but it wasn't as if they had power or control over the Christian printers.
Right.
They just used what they got. Right. And that was it. Eliyahu Cohen created a new opportunity for Jews to learn from our book. I mean, this is our book. This is our Tanakh.
Right.
And we want to cater it to ourselves. And that's what Eliyahu stood up and did. And he worked for 20 years to do it.
Talking about the incredible history of the Koren Tanakh, buy the book at the Nachum Segal Network with our friends at Koren Publications, korenpub.com, korenpub.com. Yoshua Miller and Eliav Stolman are with us. A fascinating conversation about the history of the Koren Tanakh, and I never even thought about how, unfortunately, relatively insignificant the Tanakh was hundreds of years earlier to our community, something very important to think of. So if you go back to, I don't know, the mid-1800s or late 1800s, Tanakh as an important work for a Jewish family or for any type of Jewish academic effort is nothing like it is today.
In no way.
Not even close. No comparison.
Are you talking about the way the Tanakh?
Yeah, you go
back and print where or the learning.
No, you go back 100 years to the average Jewish family or the academic pursuits of somebody in synagogue or Beit Midrash. The Tanakh is going to be nowhere to the stature that it is today.
But you can understand why. You can understand why, because what you need to know when you're living when you don't live in Israel, what you need to know in the extent is halacha. You have to know what to do. You want to learn Talmud because you have to have a connection to Yiddishkeit, probably to the sources of the halacha. Tanakh, I imagine, is just third or fourth in importance. I mean, everyone knows it's the good book, but it's just not there, especially when the Christians were so well-read in Tanakh. It wasn't a Jewish thing to do.
Right, understood.
And now we're reclaiming our book.
Did the Koren Tanakh change or alter or influence the way we read the basic Chumash, the way we read the basic Torah every week from the Torah? Did it have any influence in that area or that tradition of the way the Torah is read for thousands of years that continues today the same way that it always was?
That's a very good question. The answer, unfortunately, once again, is for the past 400, 500 years before Eliyahu Cohen came along,
right.
the Torah that people were using, or the Chumashim that people were using in shuls, if they had them, not everyone could purchase them, the ones they were using were not at all in sync with the Sefer Torah in shul.
Right, which means...
The Sefer Torah used in shul was always written according to the halacha.
Right.
But the print editions were printed by Christians.
Yeah, but he's printed. But they and he eventually are writing with vowels, etc. So, if, for instance, pronunciation of a word that might be in a certain way or a certain tradition among those who read the Torah on Shabbos or, you know, Monday, Thursday, etc., may be a certain way, is it possible that Eliyahu Cohen comes along and the way he researches and ends up writing that word in his Tanakh makes for a completely different word, a completely different reading today?
So 2 years ago, I wrote an essay that in Hebrew, so it's hard to find. I wrote this in Hebrew, giving six major examples only in Sefer Shmuel.
Wow.
Six major examples of differences between Tanakh editions, where in each of the six instances, you can see that not only it's just another vav or another yud, you understand not only the whole verse, you understand the whole chapter differently in light of the difference of adding whatever addition it was. So the answer is definitely yes. There's a Christian agenda there, and whether it comes to prefigurations or of Christian figures, or whether it comes to other Christian agendas, or portraying the Jews as a forgotten nation or the wandering Jew, it's all out in the Quran Bible. It's all out, and it does change the way people learn.
Unbelievable. All right, so now at this point in the conversation, with this type of background, we can officially declare that the Koran Tanakh, being the only one to ever been researched, printed, and published in the State of Israel, is in fact a revolutionary work in the history of the Jewish people. Simple as that.
Very true.
The whole thing is unbelievable. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I would add, not only in Israel, specifically in Jerusalem. This
right.
was the concept was, this was the Jerusalemite Tanakh. This was the Tanakh Yerushalmi. And just as the poet, Yehuda Amichai, who's considered the Jerusalemite poet, says, he calls Jerusalem Ir Namal al Sfat HaNitzach, a port city on the banks of the Sea of Eternity, which means that Jerusalem was always there. Whether we were there, whether we weren't there, and we're back here, I think the fact that the Tanakh, whether it was a learned book in Jewish heritage, or it wasn't, or we're back and we're reclaiming it, I think the Tanakh is obviously the port book on the Sea of Eternity. And that's why the connection between the two, the Tanakh Koran and Jerusalem, was essential.
Wow. Unbelievable. We talked about the textual precision earlier. There's also a note here on aesthetic beauty, which you touched on earlier. Now, is that only because of the tools available to somebody like Eliyahu Koren in the 20th century, that he was able to concentrate on the design, on the beauty, of the accuracy, of the aesthetic element of the Tanakh? Is that something he would not have been able to have done 200 years earlier?
Well, you could find these beautiful codex, Tanakhim, in museums. They're really beautiful, you know, and have these amazing illustrations around them. So every era had its technology, I suppose. But, yes, of course, he had, in a way, something that previous generations did not have. You know, then again, he didn't have computers back then.
Right.
the optical checks, you know, and... you know, he went back and forth to Paris, you know, to get the right letters. So, yes, of course, something about the technology back then was available to him that wasn't to people in the past. But I think it was more than just the availability of the technology. It was something about his vision. And, you know, when you touch Koran Tanakh, and I think it's true about all the Koran products, there's something about them that, they're a piece of beauty. They're a piece of art. I see sometimes clients come, you know, to the publishing house, and you know they're touching the Koran in a way as if it was a jewel. There is something about the beauty of the Tanakh, it's true about Mr. Du and the Talmud, that really brings out also the text. And something very important in the brand's values is that beauty is not just for the sake of being pretty. It's there to enhance the text. And, you know, we use cream paper, so it will be easier on the eye. And the special font is there to make it as readable as possible for everyone. We really think about every tiny little detail. Of course, it has an element of beauty to it, but for us, it's just to make it more available to the reader.
Right. More appealing to the eye. I understand all that. There's I think there's two elements. Number one, when someone visits, as you just described, They feel they're not just touching the Tanakh, but touching something that's so symbolic of the renewal of the Jewish people, which I think is so significant. And the other area is what you just described really applies to all your works. I mean, there's something about, like the Talmud Bavli, for instance. It looks so appealing. It's sort of like you're acquiring your authors and commentators to think in an illustrative manner, that there better be good photos here to attract people to this page of Talmud. And who in our tradition ever thought that way earlier? I don't think anybody did.
Very true. We're putting so much effort and time and money, I believe, to get, you know, that perfect product, that perfect page. You know, I see typesetters sitting on a Talmud page, you know, for days just to get that perfect layout and the picture in just the perfect corner. It's very important to us, and we get these feedbacks from clients all the time. You know, they get this special experience learning about Talmud because it's just fun, it's pretty, it's beautiful, it's enhancing the experience, and it makes it so more legible. You know. This is something that is very important to us.
I'm sure people think in the back of their mind, maybe subconsciously, am I allowed to be studying Talmud from such a beautiful work? You know, like, is this a really Jewish approach to have such lovely pictures and beautiful illustrations? And I think the answer we've learned is yes. You know, I was sent one of the examples of the font in the Tanakh, the famous word Vayishakehu. I mean, I believe every Tanakh had dots over the word Vayishakehu, correct? This was not a Koran revelation. This is in every Tanakh in the history of the Jewish people, or am I wrong?
But no, this was in the Tanakh. This was also in Sefer Torah.
So right, and it's in the Torah itself, correct, in the Torah itself. But, so that I ask you two questions. There is a Dagesh in the Yud, there's a Dagesh in the Shin. Are the two of those, the Gashim, different?
So I will answer that question shortly, but just you had a statement which I couldn't skip.
Sure.
The fact that our Jews allowed to learn from something so beautiful.
Right.
I couldn't let that.
There are people in our tradition who I think would feel guilty imbibing in something beautiful at the same time that they're studying the Talmud.
Beauty is not the issue. I think Jews can find a way to feel guilty no matter what. But when it comes to specifically beauty, I think that's the whole idea. I mean, speaking on Yom Yerushalayim, the fact that Jerusalem liberated completely in the 67 war, the right. Six-Day War, something happened after the Six-Day War. Something happened not only in Israel. Outside of Israel, a lot of Jews walking around who previously weren't necessarily proud of their Judaism or didn't want to flaunt it. Suddenly, after having almost like our newly born country demolished, and all of a sudden coming out with an incredible, incredible Yeshuat Hashem, just right. Hashem delivering us,
and in
that,
the matter,
that resonated throughout the world, and Jews could walk around with their chest puffed up. I think there was a huge pride to be Jewish, and I think that once again comes back to the lion. Standing upright, the line that Eliyahu Cohen designed, standing upright, and from that moment on, Jews are supposed to be proud.
By the way,
that's something that also resonates throughout the products.
Right.
That Jewish heritage and liturgy in general, it's supposed to be beautiful. It's
no question.
Aesthetic. Okay.
No, it's a very important point, and on your first point, that's why there's a prophetic nature to the symbol of the emblem of the city of Jerusalem, a prophetic nature that emblem came out way before the 1967 war, and as we have been as we know from our own experience in this country, you know, before the 67 war, men wore caps in the street, and after the 67 war, they wore kippot in the streets. Just one example of the Jewish pride that they associated with the victory of the State of Israel and the way that God delivered that victory. Now humor me with my Dagesh question. The Yud and the Shin, are they different?
Oh, yeah.
They are different. Not to me.
They are different.
But they are different.
to tell the truth, keep it between us, but not to me either. but I'm not Eliyahu Cohen, and I'm also not a designer in our company.
And are there is there any difference in the dots over the word Vayishakeyu? Are all six the same or not?
All six the same.
All six are the same. Okay.
Yeah, but just think about that. The yud, think about the type of space he has.
Right.
The type of space it has inside the yud. There's almost nothing there.
Right.
And the shin, it's in count. I mean, these are all things that are taken into account. And people like you and me don't always appreciate them. But when you open the page and you see that something works, it just works. And you can't always put it into words, but you see that it works. That's what lies behind that.
It is unbelievable. And now that you've opened my eyes to it, it's just so incredible. For the stuff that I actually notice, it's unbelievable. For the stuff I don't notice, it's also pretty remarkable. But when you actually see the difference, it's incredible. Speaking with both the Yehoshua Miller, editor-in-chief of Koren Publishers Jerusalem, and Eliav Stolman, brand manager at Koren Publishers. Eliav, why as Koren continues to progress, and this is something that we've been able to see over the last year or so, the voluminous number of amazing authors and scholars and academicians who are part of this whole process, but there are a couple that are really standing out. I mean, the first is Harav Steinsaltz. It seems to be an incredible marriage, an unbelievable partnership in terms of what Rabbi Steinsaltz wants to accomplish with his Talmud, while at the same time what Koren wants to present when it comes to a Talmud. Why has that relationship worked so well?
Well, you know, I'm thinking now of the publisher, Matthew Miller. He's the man with the vision. You know, when he came to Koren, it was a tiny little company, you know, based in Jerusalem. And Matthew had this amazing vision, and he set these high goals along getting the right people, you know, these amazing scholars to take part in this vision. There you have Rav Steinsaltz and Rav Sachs, you know, that are taking part in these amazing new products. I think the shiduch, you know, with Rav Steinsaltz is doing so well because we believe in the same values. You know, we're both trying to enhance the legibility. We're both interested in getting the text closer, you know, to everybody. We so many times want, you know, that more and more people will be able to learn and to get closer, you know, to the Hebrew text. I think Steinsaltz's statement is let my people learn.
Right.
And they want actually everybody to learn. And I think it's something that we feel very, very close to. And also, you could see in the Koren Talmud, the censorship that was done by the Christian Church was taken out. So this has a lot of resemblance to the way Eliyahu Cohen thought through for the Tanakh, you know, to be as accurate and as close as whoever, whatever came down in Sinai. So I think in that sense, there is a lot of resemblance in vision and the way we see things.
And you mentioned Rabbi Sachs, and there are a lot of amazing scholars out there, but there seems to be something unique about him, something in his approach, in his lectures, in his writings that just, I don't know if it's that he takes in the entire scope of both Jewish and human existence in all of his work. There's something that seems to be very big picture about him that works again, with what Koren is doing in the world of publishing. Would you say that that's basically that's basically an accurate portrayal of the relationship between you and Rabbi Sachs?
Yeah, I think it's exactly so. You know, whoever meets Rabbi Sachs, he's amazing. You know, it's not just he's so charismatic, influential, but he too has this great vision to change, you know, how people perceive things that we feel that sometimes are being disgraced. Look at, for example, Shir HaShirim, you know, Songs of Songs. You know, sometimes you come across translations that have no connection to the text itself. You know, with our translation and our Rabbi Sachs' commentary, you get both. You get the real text, you know, and you get the Chazal commentary that Rabbi Sachs brings to the book. You know, now Shavuot is coming up, you know, and we have this amazing machzor for Shavuot that was done by for Yom Kippur. We have in Rosh Hashanah. We're working on Shavuot machzor that I was looking at for the other week, and it's a lot of work done. Rabbi Sachs is doing an immense work just to produce this Shavuot machzor that hopefully we'll have in a year or so available. And I know people all around the country is like waiting and expecting, you know, this new machzor because it really makes a difference. The tefillah is totally different when you use that machzor. So this is something that he feels he's getting through the Kohen products, and we know that our clients are very happy with it.
Do either of you have a perspective on the ripple effect that all this is having? I know we just spoke about the effects of Yerushalayim on the rest of the world in general over the last you know, almost 50 years. I know that that's a big part of it, but you are seeing very recently, right, in the last couple of years, last 2-3 years, at least from our vantage point, it looks that way, a real explosion in English speaking countries outside of Israel in terms of interest in the Koran Tanakh and all the other works. Is that just an impression that I have, or is it really the explosion that I think is happening out there?
Well, to put it quite simply, we talked before about the fact that Koran stands for a proud Judaism,
right.
A Judaism which is not abashed of itself and of its heritage, and people want that. People want that in North America. People want that in England. People want that in Australia and South Africa. And people are craving for it. For people, I mean, you see the multitudes of flock from Birthright each year. People are craving that. I think coming back to Rav Sachs, just to take an example, YouTube Rav Sachs, for example, see him speak in the parliament, see him speak to huge audiences. Almost none of which are Jews, and see how he speaks of Judaism, how he speaks about Judaism's message to the world, speaking unabashed, proud Judaism. That's why people want Rabbi Sachs. That's why people want Koran. We stand for the same thing, and that's what people get. In, whether it's in the machzors or in the sidur, or it's all over, and people are craving it. And of course, yeah, there is an explosion. I would call it a revolution, but it's not because we're giving the masses what belongs to them.
Right.
So it's not a revolution. It was always there, but we're making it happen.
What was it like when the State of Israel honored Koran publishers with the official postage stamp? I guess for outsiders like myself, it helped us realize just how national a product the Koran Tanakh is. What was it like for people like yourselves who you know, were part of this team that were honored by this distinction?
Well, you know, a state could technically give create a stamp and a coin, you know, that and a flag. Those are the three elements that a state has a right to produce. And when we heard about this new stamp coming up, you know, it was there were a few, I think, close to 1,600 offers that came to the office that was taking care of it. And we wondered if we have any chance, you know. But we thought that there's something so special about the Kohen Tanakh that obviously it will be recognizable by the committee. And, of course, 12 stamps were chosen, and one of them was the Kohen Tanakh. And when we were told about this, they said, you know, we were looking for so long for something, you know, special and unique, you know, that could really unite, you know, the whole Jewish people. And there was something about the Kohen Tanakh that, you know, just fit right in. Kohen, you know, we were a bit sad when it happened, because we said he's not here, he's not around to know But he did get to be acknowledged. He did get a street named after him in Jerusalem, and he was honored with the prestigious Jerusalem Prize. So also in his life, he knew that he made a difference. But the stamp was a special treat for us.
In what neighborhood is the street named for him?
It's in Har Choma.
Wow. Also significant.
It's a very big street.
Also significant, by the way.
Pardon?
Also significant. Har Choma has a very important role in modern Jewish history and certainly was in the news for quite a while. Maybe that's also fitting. All right. Finally, and Yehoshua, this may be more for you because I was asking you to humor me on some of the details regarding the Koran Tanakh. And I read from the information about his about the Koran font. Eliyahu Koren's unique font was based on years of research using ancient medieval manuscripts and researching the intricacies of optical research to maximize legibility. He created two fonts, one for the Koran Bible and one for the Siddur. The Siddur Aleph Bet, as stated in the Koran Sac Siddur, reads, from a visual standpoint, the contents of the prayers are presented in a style that does not spur habit and hurry, but rather encourages the worshiper to engross his mind and heart in prayer. Not that I'm asking for a psychological analysis, but I mean, and I'm sure there is something to it, but let me at least ask the question. Is there something to this that the font can go ahead and dictate whether someone approaches prayer in a way of habit and hurry instead of engrossing their mind and heart in prayer at the proper pace?
Well, before I answer, let me just say that us, as a publishing house, we do not claim to transfer your davening into an incredible reunion with God. We do not have the power to interfere with the individual Jew's connection with God. But what we can do is we can create the best setting, and we can create the best sitter, and we can make the best scenario for that to happen. Coming down to the font, I'll tell you an interesting anecdote. About 2 years ago, I was approached by someone with the Koran Siddur, and he said, "You know, I can't daven with this." I'm like, "Why not?" He says, "It's so beautiful. It's so amazing. It's like, it's a work of art. It's not a siddur." And when he said that, and he started to prove why it was so beautiful to me, I realized that what Eliyahu Koren had done in the siddur, both the Sac siddur in English and of course the Hebrew siddur, is still laid out the same way that Koren himself laid it out.
Right.
The siddur is built in such a way that it can facilitate davening. That whether it comes to the line by line, that it's cut off, like, so you can have each line gets its own content, gets its own insight. And it's not a block. Often davening, often prayer, looks as the siddur looks. If it's all block, you just run through the whole thing. And Koren has designed it as conversation. Because that's what siddur is supposed to be. And when it comes to the font, specifically the font, if you look at books that came out in the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, they have the old feeling, the old look. And already in the early 1960s, Eliyahu came out with the Koran Tanakh writing, the font, and the Koran Siddur font. And there's something so modern, yet so antique. The combination, once again, of the new and the old.
Right.
It really is groundbreaking. And the feel, once again, this comes back to what I mentioned, that some things that I don't notice and you don't notice, but you open it and you get the feeling and you say, this works. That's exactly where the designer walks in. And he says, I'm going to change the font. I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to make the font give a feeling of intimacy with God. And that's where he steps in. Could I do that? Could you do that? Probably not. He did it. And we're very proud to still have it.
When I read that, it just seems to me, that among his repertoire was the ability to understand the way the human eye and the human mind works. I mean, there's something to that, obviously. He had an insight that we would likely not be able to appreciate.
Yeah, yeah. He had this super talent, you know. It's once in probably in 100 years. But, you know, sometimes we talk a lot about Colin, and in a way it seems like something that happened, you know, 50 years ago. But it's living on, you know, especially just a month ago we came out with, close to a month ago, with a new Sidur for the Ethiopian community.
Wow.
You know, and in a way it was bringing that story back to life, because just like in the Tanakh times, you know, and like in back in the late 60s when there was no Hebrew Tanakh, you know, available, the Ethiopian community that made Aliyah 20 years ago still didn't have a Sidur. I spoke to one of the community, and he said that the Sidur that they're using is a Sidur that doesn't have Shabbat tefillot there, because it wasn't available. And now Cohen came out with a new Sidur that has the davening for the regular days and also for Shabbat. And we're, in a way, we're redoing what Cohen did. His vision is trying to get the text back, you know, to the rightful owners, you know, and to make it available again to everybody.
So now this will be the dominant sitter in Ethiopian congregations in Israel?
Actually, the story goes back 8 years ago. I happened to be working for about 4 years with the Ethiopian community, and I noticed that we used to come and give classes and teach Hebrew. All this happening in Amharic, which we all had to learn. Everyone was working with the community, and when we were davening with the Ethiopian community on Shabbat, we all noticed that on the podium there were four different books. One was a normal Hebrew sitter. One was a couple of pages binded in Amharic, written in the Tigrit, mm-hmm. written in the Fidel, which is the Amharic written language. And another book with a couple more binded pages in Amharic. And another book which had about the Sabbath prayers, half in Amharic and half in Hebrew. And I asked the Ethiopian Chazan, why would he use four? And he says, well, we don't have anything else. And at that moment I said, okay, we have to do something. We went back to the drawing table, so to speak, and we spent the next 4 years working on the perfect Amharic Siddur, which just came out early this year. And it has everything complete for the Amharic community, and it's the only one. It's the only one.
So back to my question, no doubt it will become the dominant sitter in the community.
Yeah, definitely.
Unbelievable. When the Koran Tanakh was first published in 1963, it won worldwide acclaim for its accuracy, pioneering design, and superior quality. It became a symbol of the revival of the Jewish people in their homeland, and every Israeli president used the Koran Tanakh as they took their oath of office. Ladies and gentlemen, as we celebrate Yom Yerushalayim, and this is a unique and wonderful week, I remind you that the official emblem of the city of Jerusalem was designed by Eliyahu Cohen in 1951, 16 years before the Six-Day War. Jerusalem mayor at the time, Gershon Agron, created a competition among graphic designers for the city's emblem, which Eliyahu Cohen won. The emblem is a lion of Judea guarding the wall of Jerusalem, flanked by olive branches. It symbolizes strength, tradition, and peace. The word Jerusalem is written on top. The design of the emblem is absolutely amazing. We'll keep that in mind as we celebrate Yom Yerushalayim. A big thank you to Yoshua Miller, editor-in-chief of Koran Publishers Jerusalem, and Eliav Stolman, brand manager of Koran Publishers Jerusalem. I say thank you to both of you. You taught me a great deal today, to say the least.
Thank you for having us. Thank you, Nachum.
And a Chag Sameach. Enjoy Yom Yerushalayim. The people at
Yom Yerushalayim Sameach, Nachum.
Yom Yerushalayim Sameach. The people at Koran have additional reasons to celebrate Yom Yerushalayim, and I thank both of our special guests. You have been listening to an amazing a segment of By the Book, brought to you by our friends at Koran Publishers. You can check out everything we've spoken about, because we did touch during this session, of course, on the Tanakh, of course, on the Talmud Bavli, the Sidurim, so many different works by the Rav Sachs's works as well. So many different things. You can check it all out online, korenpub.com, korenpub.com for information. I also want to thank our friends at Koren Publications, who have not only continued to make a commitment to provide amazing authors and incredible conversations to us on a weekly basis. They are also participating with us this coming Sunday in our Celebrate Israel webcast, which is going to be presented during the afternoon hours here in the Eastern Time Zone, coinciding with the Celebrate Israel Parade on Fifth Avenue. They are providing gifts for our listeners. They are involved with our incredible brand-new app project, which will allow thousands and thousands of more people to tune in on a regular basis and to get involved in the social media aspect of our network, which, of course, includes commenting on programs like this from Koren Publications. So a big thank you to Koren, and we say Chag Yom Yerushalayim Sameach to them and to the entire Jewish world. Enjoy and think of the significance of this amazing person, Eliyahu Koren, on the city of Jerusalem and on the Jewish people worldwide in all these decades since his incredible work. My thanks to Koren Publications, and my thanks to all of you for tuning in. If you're listening in its original form, buy the book from Koren Publications. Airs Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on our stream. You have been listening to the Nachum Segal Network. ¶¶